Someone blow a whistle if I go over time, because that is my tendency. The two scriptures that we read this morning, I believe, are really deeply connected. And I would call the connection is having your story heard and hearing the story. I think every one of us needs to be heard. We need to know that God hears us. And we need to know that we have the ability to hear other people's story. The story of Zacchaeus, I call it the upside down shelter story. Because Jesus walks into the town of Jericho, and he's the one that needs a place to stay. And it's Zacchaeus that has the house, but Jesus has the food. I want to tell you, before we get into this story, about a story that I did not get. I'm not proud of this story, but I told it at my church at First Baptist last week. For years, there's been a man out in front of our church on Sunday morning holding a hat. Mm-hmm. And he stands right by the steps waiting for the change. Mm-hmm. And I've been trying to convince our people that it is not healthy to put coins in that hat. Or any other hat. Because cash is the currency of the drug trade. And the drug people are very good at marketing. They've got everything down to a $5 bill. Just about. You can get a good hit of crystal meth for $5. You can buy a point of heroin for $8. And so cash is a problem, but it also, sometimes we use the cash so we don't have to get the story. We just put it in and walk on. But I try to urge our people to get the name. Learn the person's name. Take them for a coffee. Or buy them a meal. Or buy them we have tickets for meals that you can buy at our church for $2. And they can take them down to the Evelyn Sadler Center on Alexander Street and get a good lunch, breakfast, or dinner with that ticket. And we sell them for $2. That way you're putting a meal in this man's hat. But if you keep putting coins in, we continue to not get the story, and we continue to assist this person in something that we don't know that's happening. Well, a few weeks ago, after a number of years, this person, this gentleman, came in and stayed at our shelter. We run a shelter one night a week on a Tuesday night. And Karen and Patricia, hiding over there, are key volunteers. They've been there for years. Karen for 7 years, almost. And what's really important is that after a number of years, this man decided to come and stay in our shelter about 4 weeks ago for the first time. I was at the door signing people in, but I did not remember his name. So 3 weeks ago, he was standing at the step after having stayed in our shelter on a Sunday morning. And I walked up to him and I said to him what I had said many times before. I said, you know, it's really not appropriate that you stand at the bottom of these stairs every Sunday. Because it puts our people, it makes them uncomfortable. And they don't know what to do, and they don't have time in the setting of a Sunday morning to get your story. But we should get it. And I said, I noticed that you came into our shelter last week. And I'd love to sit down and talk with you. And then he said to me, oh, you run shelter one night a week, so you don't have to help us on the other 6 days. So I did what I tell people not to do, and that is be offended. So I took offense at what he said. I said, you have no idea about what you just said. I said, I'm going to show you what we spend on the other 6 days pursuing the stories and the people that we get to know in shelter. Because Tuesday night is not the end of the story. But by saying what I said, I never got the rest of his story. I can't even tell you his name. And I'm not proud of that story. But I will get his name. I don't give up easy. But in this story, Jesus walks into Jericho. And he immediately, obviously Jesus knows more about other people than you and I know. But God has given you and I the ability to get other people's stories. And I believe by his Spirit, he will empower us to do that and help us to train to do that. It takes training to get other people's stories. It's a tricky business, but it's at the heart of their healing and it's at the heart of my healing. In this story, Jesus walks in to Jericho and he sees Zacchaeus. But we're told Zacchaeus was a wealthy man. So it was probably obvious to Jesus, just by the clothes he's wearing, he's a wealthy man. Jesus knows this. And he sees him, and Zacchaeus being short. Now you think, well, what's so important about the story telling us he's short? Well, the fact is, if he's short and the crowd is yearning to see Jesus, the fact that he has to climb a tree means this wealthy man has no respect in this town. Nobody honors Zacchaeus. Nobody likes him. In fact, he is despised. Because here's the wealthiest man in town. You see, he's a traitor. He's the chief tax collector. He doesn't go around collecting your taxes. He talks to the guys that do go get your taxes, and then he takes his portion. He's a traitor to the Roman. He's traded in his town to the Roman government. And so he's despised. And he has to climb a tree. That's why it's important that we're told he's short. Because nobody would make a little space in the line to let short Zacchaeus in the front of the line so he could see Jesus. And Jesus sees it. And Jesus understands something very deep. And that all the people didn't get. Because we're told in the story that everybody muttered. Everybody muttered when Jesus stopped and said to Zacchaeus, I must. Isn't that a weird way to invite yourself to someone's home? I must stay at your house. What Jesus is saying, from what I've seen in this town, I've entered this street and I see you up a tree. And I see you in these good clothes. And I see that you have money. But I see that you're despised. And if this situation stays like this, someone's going to die. Things are risky. This is a very dangerous situation for everybody involved. And so Jesus said, I must stay at your house. And Jesus stays. And he gets the story. Now, it's interesting, we're not told what's at the really heart of the story. We know what Zacchaeus' addiction is, don't we? He's addicted to money. But why is he addicted to money? Why? That's at the heart of the story. We tell people at Shelter that the addiction that people are struggling with, that's what keeps them on the street. But that is not what put them there. That's not what put them there. There's another story behind the addiction, and that's where we have to go. And we have to commit ourselves to people long enough to hear that story. And so Jesus does that in this story. He tells Zacchaeus, I must stay at your house. He goes to his house, and he feeds Zacchaeus. Now, we don't know exactly what Jesus said, but I'm sure it was something like this. Zacchaeus, you have money. But you have nothing else. You have no friends. Everybody in this town despises you. And you're living with a broken heart. Nobody is taking you for coffee. Nobody gave you a chance to get your head through to the front of the line so you could see me. What does that tell you? Is it worth it, Zacchaeus? Is your addiction worth it? Do you see what it's costing you? It's costing you everything. You've got nothing. All this money and no relationships. No love. And it doesn't take Zacchaeus long to figure out, wow, what a foolish man I've been. I've kept all this wealth and I've got nothing. He's right. I have nothing. Actively pursuing the story. The town muttered when Jesus went to stay at Zacchaeus' house. What do you think they were saying after Jesus left? He changed everything. Changed all the relationships. The people could now, can you believe it? We got our money back. He's not cheating us anymore. He's actually got a heart. And you know, when you help someone on the street and you find out their story and you watch someone climb out of their addiction, and then you start to realize how many other people this person was touching in their addiction. You get to meet their mother, you get to meet their brother, you get to meet their aunts and their uncles, and you start to, and their children, and you start to see things come together for a whole new group of people that you don't see. So every time you see someone on the street, you need to realize there's a whole group of people connected to that person that are affected by the struggle that this person is in. It isn't a one-person story. None of them are. And those are some of the things that we learn. But getting the story. That's why I've asked us to read Isaiah 58. Because in Isaiah 58, there's a great ending to what God is telling us about the fasting that pleases Him. Isn't it? I'm very fascinated by the fact that serving the poor is connected to fasting in Isaiah 58. When we fast, what do we want to do? We want to focus on God. We want to have some time, spiritual time with God without distraction. We want God to give us guidance and help when we go fasting. And what Isaiah 58 is saying, this is the fast that pleases God. This is the one that pleases Him. Is this not the kind of fasting, he said in verse 6, that I have chosen, to loosen the chains of injustice, to untie the cords of the yoke, and to set the oppressed free? Is it not to share your food with the hungry, to provide the poor wanderer with shelter, and when you see the naked, to clothe him, and not to turn away from your own flesh and blood? Then your light will break forth like the dawn, and your healing will quickly appear. How tied we are in this kind of a fast, when we hear other people's stories, and we walk with them in their disastrous world, and we give someone shelter, and we share our food with them, it's tied to our own healing. And I can tell you, on countless occasions, when I have felt discouraged and come to shelter, and someone off the street starts to tell us their story. I want to tell you one story that Karen and I shared in a number of years ago, at least five years ago now. And this man's story is public, so he doesn't mind me telling. His name is John Pollock. Was really high up in the education world, had a good job. Anyway, he went away to a seminar, came back, and his marriage had blown apart in one weekend. Got a note on the door, don't come in. I have custody of our son. You're done. John Pollan got involved at a party where drugs were available and got hooked on heroin. His life went downhill from there. Everything else fell apart. He lost his job, ended up living on downtown East Side. When we met John Pollan, Karen and I, over 5 years ago, he came into the door of our shelter and he was asking for $10 to pick up his laundry that had been laundered at a laundromat. So Karen and I sat down with him and I said, well, you know, I get a lot of stories. In fact, 99% of the stories I get aren't true. So we'll go get your laundry, but I'm not going to give you $10. We're going to go with you to pick up your laundry. So we went, and sure enough, the laundry was there. It was folded, and there was a bill there, and it was ready. And so, okay, the first story you told me, John, is true. Your laundry was here. You weren't just after the $10 bill. And then he just said, I need someone to trust me. And we were talking to him, we found out that he was a musician. And so I loaned him a very expensive guitar that I have that I don't know how to play. And for the first time in years, that guitar made great music on the street. And John Pollan earned some money by busking and sitting in the places downtown. And he could make a living. And then one day he needed more money than I gave him, than he was making. And then he came to me with his head down and ashamed, and he said, you know, I pawned your guitar off at a pawn shop. And this is the last day that I can go pick it up. If I pay back the loan, I got $90, but I owe $120. And if I don't pay it today, I'm going to lose your guitar. So we got in the, we got in my car, drove back to the church. And we picked up the guitar and I paid the money. And we got to the church parking lot and John Paulin said, "You're probably not going to loan me the guitar again, are you?" I said, "I don't think I will." But before I got out of the car, I handed it back to him. And I said, "Don't do that again." And he never did. It's been 5 years. And John Paulin is going to put on a concert with another very talented violinist on December the 9th at Grandview Calvary Baptist Church to raise money for our shelter and for another shelter. So he keeps coming back all the time. But we got his story. We got to the inside of his story. And he's on a journey, and so are we. We started a shelter at our church 7 years ago because of a police officer who walked in the door into the reception area of our church, and he said, Officer Greg Rowley, and he said to the receptionist, "I need you to help me with my children. I have to go down this, on Davy Street and Super Value, and there are 20 youth who sleep under there in the parking lot, and I have to go kick them to wake them up at 5:30 in the morning, and I don't like doing that. Why don't you help me take care of them so they can sleep inside your building?" That's how we got started. I arrived at the church, and there was already a group of 40 people that said, "Let's do something." I said, "Why not?" I arrived, and 2 weeks later, we bought a lasagna, put it in the oven, and bought some mats and put them in the gym. And it was really comical. The very first night, we went out on the street. I went right down into the Super Value parking lot, and the 22 youth were there, some of them using marijuana, some something else. And we went down there at midnight and said, "You know, now you can sleep in the church. And there's some food for you." Well, three of them said they were ready to come. And the other 19 said, "No way." You know, they weren't going to sleep in a church. And so they overpowered the other three and they didn't show up. That was at midnight. We went back there at 1 o'clock in the morning, invited them again. The three finally came for dinner at 1 o'clock in the morning. And the one person stayed overnight. And so, you know, at our shelter, we have people awake all night to make sure that people have a safe sleep in our gym. And so we had two people watching one person. Probably the safest sleep he had all night in his whole life. And now we have, last week there was 140 people for dinner. 34 people sleep overnight in the church. And they get breakfast in the morning. Another 30 people come back on their way to work who live in some of the poorer hotels downtown and come back for breakfast. So we have 60 people for breakfast. And we haven't missed a Tuesday in almost 7 years. And it just keeps growing. And we keep getting stories. And that's what's so significant about Isaiah 58. I love this. This is the verse. Isaiah 58:9. Right? "If you go and take care of the hungry and the wanderer and the naked." Isaiah 58:9 says this. "Then you will call, and the Lord will answer, and you will cry for help, and he will say, 'Here am I.'" Jesus is telling us, if we spend ourselves on behalf of those who are struggling, not only will we hear their stories, but he will hear ours. And who among us isn't struggling? Who among us doesn't yearn on a daily basis to know that our lives have significance? And that someone sees us, and that we're loved, and that we have a reason for being here, and we have words to speak that bring healing to other people's lives. The stories that we've shared, I just want someone to tell me how we're doing on time. Do I have 1 minute, 2 minutes?
As long as the stories are good.
One of the... These are the things that would... The people that come into shelter are people that we would never have any other way of getting to hear their story. I say that shelter is the beginning of the relationship. That's what makes it so significant. And believe me, it does take a lot of work on the other 6 days to follow up on the people that start to tell you their stories. You see, they come in and they eat for about 3 months if they're shy. They will tell you, they'll just come in and you get to know their name, and after a few months they start to feel like, wow, these volunteers, there's 40 volunteers, and these people really do care about us. And they start to tell you more about themselves. And then all of a sudden, after a few months, someone, this happens often, they'll come up and they'll say, you know, I have a warrant out for my arrest. I've done a few break and enters, and I want to turn myself in and get rid of the warrant, but I want you to come and visit me because they might put me in jail for a few weeks. And when I get out, will you help me get a job? And that's happened so many times. And we say, yeah, we'll come and visit you. You see, they're not going to do it unless they know someone's walking in their story with them. One of the stories, the things that we've been a part of, is a young man named, he was 44 years old, Terry Johnson, was coming into, in fact, his picture is used on the advertisement for the UBC Learning Exchange on Main Street near, just near Powell. And Terry used to come in with his red book, Mao's red book, and would argue. And he would always love to talk to you as long as you could defend your position. He was glad that you had a faith, that you loved Jesus, but make sure you were able to have a good debate with him. And we didn't know that Terry was trying heroin, but on the third time that he tried it, he did it alone in his hotel room near Powell and Main, and he overdosed and was found dead in the morning. This is just a year and a half ago. And the guys on the street called me and they said, we need to do a memorial for Terry. And so I went down to UBC Learning Exchange and we did a memorial, and about 30 people were there from the street. And we talked about Terry. And people cared about him. He was an amazing guy. He was a graduate from University of Victoria, was a journalist. And the story came out. And what I came to know was that his mother was only 60 years old. She had him when she was 16. And when I was back at UBC Learning Exchange a few days later, his mother showed up. And she said, I'm trying to find out what happened to my boy. I didn't know what happened. How did he get into this? I thought he was just surrounded by a bunch of druggies in a dark, dark world. But now she said, now I meet you. And I see who his friends were. And as much as she was in pain, she was thankful that she could talk to his friends. And we sat in the garden behind the UBC Learning Exchange and we talked about her son. And I thought, wow, just the privilege it is to be invited into this inside of even Terry's mother's life. And to be with them through this struggle. And to be with the people on the street who knew Terry well and cared about him. That's just one of those stories that we've been invited into. What really excites me, you know what shelter does for us? We run into the stories and we find out how complicated people's lives are. And I'm so thankful that the people at St. Paul's Hospital, Dr. Bill McEwen, he's in charge of this psychosis drug ward, that this psychosis created from crystal meth. He's experiencing a lot of demand for the beds on his ward because of crystal meth. So he comes to shelter, and he's helped us understand some of the complications. And we need Bill McEwen to be with us. And he needs us to do what we do. Because he can come there and see people coming off the street. And it helps him to measure what the real story is out on the street as far as the drug addictions are concerned and the effect that it's having. He sees some of his clients in their daily walk. And he just comes in and there's no game on. It's just the way things are. And then we're tied to the street youth services and the gathering place and people who own the cheap hotels that some of them are really well managed with a real heart for the people that stay in them. And we get to hear about those and we get to know the people that own those hotels. In fact, some of them go to our church who have bought those hotels with the intention of making them a safe place to live and keep them clean and affect people's lives from the ground up. And it's amazing how we've been tied together in a community that we were never a part of because we do shelter one night a week. But at the heart of the shelter is getting the story. And I'm so thankful that we've been able to keep going for 7 years. The reason I'm thankful for the 7 years is because I've come to discover when you get to know someone on the street, when enough disaster has happened in someone's life to put them on the street, you know, the climb out is slow and arduous and tough. But you know, after 5 years, it takes about 5 years to see someone who finally says, you know, with your help, I think I can walk out of this. With the help of Jesus in my life and you people working with me, I think I can do this. And you start walking with them, and it's really discouraging in the middle of the climb out. You see them crash one day. And we've had lots of those stories. We expect someone who's been addicted will probably crash 12 times before they finally walk away from the addiction. Although they will always tell you that they're an addict forever. But that climb out is generally a 5-year run or longer. And it's important for us to hang in there, to encourage each other, and to hear each other's stories. Because during the 5 years that we're walking with someone else, we have disasters of our own. We have lots of them. And I want to tell you from my own personal experience that we're all just a very thin line away from being on the street. Because it doesn't take much to put us out there. When you start to hear other people's stories, you realize it just takes one accident, one illness, one injustice, one bad decision, and all of a sudden you're there. And I'll just tell you a 10-second brief of my story. In 1997, my oldest son, David, was 17 years old, woke up in the middle of the night, delirious, delusional, and close to death. The influenza A in Toronto that was going around, the standard viral flu, during the night went into his brain, and he woke up with viral encephalitis. And when we went into Sick Kids Hospital for 2 weeks, the doctors kept telling me, you have a 50% chance of keeping your son. We're just going to try to, you know, stabilize his condition, and we don't know what the brain injury will be after this. My son David spent 6 months in the care in the acquired brain injury unit at Bloorview McMillan in Toronto. We were able to come here. He was allowed to go to high school in Richmond. He went there for 2 years, finished at the age of 20, did 2 years at Kwantlen College in a course for adults with job skills training for adults with learning disabilities. And he's been working for the 7-Eleven food company for 2 years now. And I can tell you, in the middle of that chaos that strikes your family in the middle of a night, if you don't have support and friends and a God you know who hears you and loves you, that story can put you on the street, because you might not get enough of your life together to maintain the stability that you had before the tragedy happened. So I know that in the middle of the night, it can all change very rapidly, and it does for many. And God asks us, as his people, to be like Jesus and to hear other people's stories and to have our eyes open. So when we walk into the Jericho, you can see the Zacchaeus in the tree. And you can tell him, I need to stay with you. You and I need to stay together. And what happens after that is amazing in our own relationship with God. Because he comes along and he said, I can hear you. When you cry out, Bob, when you cry out for help, I'll hear you. And you know, I know he will hear me because I've seen him hear the friends that I've walked with. I saw him answer John Paulin, and I know he'll answer me. Let me pray. Father, we're thankful that we can gather here this morning, and we can sing, and we read your word. And you have guided us over so many years, and you've protected us, and you've told us about your love. And we thank you that somehow you broke through and we heard you. And so we gather here this morning, and I just pray that you increase all of our abilities to to hear other people's stories. Because in the middle of it, not only is there healing at stake, our own is too. So we thank you for your patience with us. In Jesus' name, amen.